Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is the ninth day of December 2015. A winter wonderland here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Virginia, Stan. A winter wonderland that's been about 70 degrees today. And probably 60, 65, 70 tomorrow and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And, I don't know, we'll just call this the last gasp of autumn? Or shall we call it, I don't know, for lack of a better term, how about climate change? I know, climate is not weather, weather is not climate, and maybe it's no better for me to say that than it is when that guy who cashes all those checks from the hydrocarbon industry, what's his name, Inhofe, brings a snowball onto the Senate floor. I understand that, but still, to be December the 9th in central Appalachia, you know, here about 1600 feet above mean sea level, which is, you know, it ain't Death Valley, this is kind of weird. Yeah, I mean, I saw people in shorts today, okay? That's something approaching apocalyptic around here for December. But, so welcome. Welcome. I hope it's as lovely where you are. I absolutely do. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And, yes, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on The Horn. I am going to disappoint some people. I'm going to forego the Prayer Meeting Wednesday shtick. Sometimes it's just not in me. But don't worry. I mean, there's plenty of Prayer Meeting Wednesday topicality, but the hutton and the hotten and the... Sometimes the spirit just isn't there. And it just isn't. Remember, please, this is a listener-supported operation, a listener-supported effort at building and creating and maintaining community. And to that end, we try to raise $200 an evening. We didn't do that last night. We had a fundraising goal of $290 last night. And were it not for the fact that one of the exquisite handcrafted turkey feather portraits sold, we would be in a whale of a hole. But as it is, we're in about a $300 hole as it is. Now, with regard, okay, so there were three of them. Now there are two. One of those will be given away to someone whose name goes in a hat on Monday night after Moran Monday. And everybody who contributes between last night and then gets a chance at being the recipient of that handcrafted artisanal. They're breathtakingly beautiful. They are. They just are. They just are. And I know our buddy Bob will enjoy his. One more is available at the established standard price for these works, $400. And the other one will go to some lucky soul who has contributed some sum, over the course of the week. And like I said, we'll do the drawing on Moran Monday night. Also, as an encouragement, a $50 contribution We'll get you a copy of Steve Trash's The Green Album. You may have heard Steve on the program when I was covering for Malloy. In fact, it would be two Wednesdays ago, the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. Yes. And so that, too, is an availability. And then, you know, we're also always looking for... new subscribers. All new subscribers will get a horn bumper sticker, a They Want It All bumper sticker, or a horn bumper sticker. If you want to subscribe at $20, you get both. At $10, you get one. So that's out there as well. So all told, you know, we need 30 at 10, 10 at 30. Go to the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com and click it, and it'll open the interface. And if you want to do $10 a month or $20 a month, you just click that little box, check that little box that says make this a recurring contribution. Okay? And make sure in all instances that I have a mailing address so that I can, we're going to just sit down and do a wild-eyed day of envelope stuffing and mail out a bunch of bumper stickers and some other stuff that has to go out as well. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, with all of that having been said, and hopefully all of that now being taken care of, also the ever-present reminder that you too can be a part of the madcap online extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. It costs absolutely nothing. We're really not selling anything at all here. No, not at all. But access to the chat room is absolutely scot-free. I don't know. There may be some Scots in there. Oh, yeah, Sparky's in there. He's Scottish by heritage. So it's not scot-free, but it's certainly without charge. And good evening to King of Cups and Little Gray and Texas Tea, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Okay? Okay. So, no, we're gonna do, and God knows there's plenty of it, we're going to do some... religiously oriented stuff, some religion industry stuff, some abuses of a spiritual nature on this prayer meeting Wednesday, as we always do. Oh, a little program note. Friday night. No regular program, no Friday on the front porch. I will be filling in for Mike Malloy that evening. So tune on over at 9 p.m. instead of 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, let's run over, because I had asked him to pop by. Like I said, we're foregoing all the shtick, but Eric Bjorn, our good friend, and, better theologian than I, has popped by. Good evening, Eric. How are you?
Bob, how are you tonight?
I'm hanging in there, hopefully. I had a little dinner from our friend, instead of being from down the fellowship hall, I had a little dinner from our friends over at Secret Sandwich Society a little bit ago. They made a beautiful curried tomato bisque, and it just, even on a 70-degree December day, it hit the spot.
Even with civilization in the balance, tomato bisque is the way to go. I couldn't agree more. I'm a little jealous.
It's yummy, and they make the most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful pimento cheese sauce, which I have taken to adding to grits. Oh, stop!
Oh my
it.
God!
Yeah, it's
yeah,
just
no. Please stop it now, because I'm sitting here in my Feel the Burn underoos with a bottle of cheap red wine.
Feel the Burn underoos? Those are, oh, I gotta have some. with the little blue piping trim, absolutely.
Well, I'm not sure what that means, but what I wouldn't do for a tureen of tomato bisque to go with this moment.
Well, and you know what? They hand cut their French fries and make their own French onion dip that has just a little zing of balsamic vinegar in it. And wow, doesn't that go nicely as well? I just love the folks over at Secret Sandwich Society. They're wonderful, and this isn't even a paid sponsorship. They just make me very happy with their food.
Well, you know what else is wonderful? Or who else, Bob? You know, it's not too often, probably, that anybody says this, and they should say it more. You're wonderful. In fact, you know what? You are better than a tureen of tomato bisque. You you and your lifelong mission stand for justice. I mean, it's a daily marathon that you run. You rarely get credit for it. And don't go saying no, because I'm just gonna pile it on you. On behalf of many, many of us who listen to you, who read your words, who benefit from your tireless efforts, whether it be in legislation or just generally in forming public policy, collectively, thank you. Thank you for all you do. You work your ass to the bone.
I don't think the bones are showing yet, but thank you very kindly. That's very, very nice, Eric. It really, really is.
I mean, I'm not sure, you know, are you suffering from coccidinia or anything like that? But
well, no, but there's a joke that begins with a pair of newlyweds on their wedding night, and he takes his socks off, and she says, and his toes are just all messed up, and the newly married bride says, so, what's with your? And he says, well, I was sickly as a child, and I had tolio. She said, you mean polio? He said, no, tolio, look. And then he drops trow, and he's all knock-kneed, and his knees are knobby and nasty. She said, well, what gives? And he says, I told you, I was sickly as a child, and I had a terrible bout of measles. And she says, you mean measles? He says, no, measles. Look at my knees. And so then the boxers come down, and she goes, oh, let me guess, you were very sickly as a child, and you suffered from smallpox. I just love that joke. I just love that joke. I'm sorry. It was entirely inappropriate, but I couldn't resist any opportunity I ever get to tell that joke. I tell that joke.
But you know what? If there ever was a week for entirely inappropriate, we're sitting in the middle of it. I mean,
well, we are. I mean,
from the four corners of Ted Cruz's flat Earth comes absurdity. In every direction you turn.
Well, I mean, let's see. We are looking at the final failure of a, because I'm going to have to do ciphering here, and that's never a good thing. That's 200 plus 15, plus, that's 25 and 3. That's 228 year of failure, an absolute failure of 228 years of attempts at self-governance, because we may not get over this, Eric.
I don't know. I don't know, Bob. Although, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I sit back and go, it took the universe 14 billion years to come up with lime yogurt. So maybe we're headed somewhere.
And 14 billion in 3 days to come up with Bananas Foster yogurt, which is just freaking awesome.
You know what? I think we're onto something, Bob. The universe needed those 3 extra days.
Oh, my God. There really are Bernie Underoos. Sparky just sent me a picture. But they have red piping trim and not blue.
I told her to turn that webcam off. That's just not funny. Feel the burn, underoos. There you go. Who needs a political? Who needs a super PAC?
when you've got superhero underoos.
When you've got your own underoos, there you go. I mean, and listen, everyone who accuses him of a socialist, I mean, being a socialist, that is an interest. Somebody's making a buck from those, right?
Probably a small fortune, given that they're underoos.
Well, in case of my underoos, a very small fortune. But
so there's this wedding. So there's this couple, and they get married, and they're on their wedding night. Never. No, we already did that.
Thank you. Yeah, there we go. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm glad we're not doing the tent revival. I don't think I have Pastor Pillow in me. I'm going a bit hoarse. I've been typing so madly, I've lost my voice. It's been an absolutely
scream at the keyboard, Dewey.
Yeah, it has been, and I'm not like that. Usually, when the world's getting all hyped up on a subject, I like to take my time and wait to the end of the week and put some Pastor Pillow thought into it, or come in as the last word on anything relevant. Rarely do I find myself at the beginning or middle of an important subject. I think about it and chew on it so much that I'm there at the end. But man, I could not stay silent. I had a moral imperative to speak on the subject of Donald J. Trump.
And I have seen it. An open letter to the world regarding Donald Trump. P.S. Don't put off tomorrow.
Yeah,
who you can despise today,
or who you can Holocaust today. I mean, in his case, you know, and often the photos. I don't have the final say on the Faddos, but on this particular article, and again, if you go to my Facebook writer page, Eric Bjorn, A-R-I-K, funny spelling, can't help it. Parents were products of the 70s. A-R-I-K Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. Or go to forwardprogressives.com. I think it's one of the top articles right now. I was thinking about pictures for this open letter to the world about Donald Trump, and I thought, you know what we haven't seen in the 6 months, now half year of this man's campaign, are all of the WrestleMania photos. Everybody seems to have forgotten what one of the main pastimes of this.
Well, I had, oh my God.
Listen, just do yourselves a favor if you want a little bit of entertainment, pictorial entertainment this evening. Do a web search, an image search of Donald Trump wrestling. The man lived on WrestleMania and pro wrestling stunts as his pastime. I mean, is it sounding familiar, folks? Look at the photos. If you want to know where
he was there. He was there.
He wasn't just there. He was shaving Vince McMahon's head. I mean, he must have gotten to the end of that season of entertainment in his life and went, you know what? I'm ready to run for president. I know how to stir a crowd of people who believe in anything fake. I mean, let's look at wrestling crowds, really. I mean, the world over.
Well, no, I did it via, free product placement. But sweet jumping, yeah, you do. It doesn't matter the search engine you use. Donald Trump, WrestleMania, and there are bajillions of photos.
Why haven't we seen these in the last 6 months? Why are we taking this? Unfortunately, we have to take him seriously simply because 30 million people would march into. would Gooch step alongside him?
I was going to say, you mean march into Nuremberg, Iowa?
Right, precisely, right by his side. So we have to take him seriously. But we should be painting the picture of what this man legitimately is, which is a joke. He is a Joker turned juggernaut, and we all sat by and watched as the frog boiled.
And see,
those of us who opposed him considered him a joke and rolled our eyes. And meanwhile, manufacturers were printing off political front yard signs by the hundreds of thousands. And here we are. And the man stands on a retired aircraft carrier in South Carolina and makes statements that finally draw a line in the sand. Finally, his Republican presidential playmates realized that the man had laid a political nuclear turd, and they finally had to call him on it.
The thing is, there I had a list by Igor Volsky last night over at Think Progress that showed that every other member of the Republican clown arc, Eric, has said something similarly hateful at some point in time.
Of course they have, because they realize that they have to rise
because it's good for business.
Pro wrestling, right? They have to rise to his level of pro wrestling drama, and that's where we are. And now, I mean, honestly, if you take Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Mike Huckabee and you put them in a room, they are insane, but they are not as insane as they have had to become.
Well, and one other thing, and this is more of a theoretical kind of a conversation, Eric. Is Godwin's Law dead?
Yeah. So, gosh, I'm just tempted to. I should just read this letter.
Well, I'm gonna have you do it, but I want to touch this first.
And for those who don't know what Godwin's Law is, there's a temptation in all dialogue. When you feel a bit unhinged, when you're starting to get a little emotional, to go ad hominem to the man on the person you're criticizing and ultimately compare him or her to Mussolini or Hitler or Stalin. And Godwin's Law more or less refers to the fact to all political discussions, eventually, if they're not monitored by reason, will end up at Hitler.
Yeah, and it's with particular reference to the internet and you know, comment threads and stuff like that. I only ask you that because before we get to the body of your letter, I want to point something out. And I'm just going straight up Godwin's Law on it, Eric. Once upon a time, there was a man named Paul von Hindenburg. People who are fond of airships will recall the name.
Right.
He had a Zeppelin named for him.
Oh, the humanity!
Yes, words which were historically uttered by a West Virginian, I might add, but Lakehurst, New Jersey. But with the rise to power of a certain little Austrian with a Charlie Chaplin mustache. By the way, 619. Who had 619? That was tonight's Hitler lottery number. Damn it, Gerald. But anyway, Paul von Hindenburg, upon the little guy with the Chaplin mustache's rise to power, said, "I will handle this, Hitler." And then proceeded to get flanked, outrun, and can-eyed, for lack of a better term, completely encircled and destroyed. And after that, the rest is, as they say, history. When Andrew Cuomo over on Chicken Noodle News asks, I think it should have come as a statement of fact and might have had more strength, but asks, "Mr. Trump, are you a fascist?" Ashley Banfield has referred to him, has compared him to Mussolini. And I don't think the comparisons are unfair.
He said, "Of course I'm a fascist. Haven't you seen my fall line?"
You'll smoke a turd in hell for that one.
By the way, I just find it somewhat ironic that all of our conversations, whether your brother Bob and I'm Pastor Pillar or not, come down to Zeppelins.
Well, I had to work the Zeppelin in there precisely for that very reason.
I'm ever grateful.
And the horn has a long history of Zeppelins. A while back, a dear friend of ours, Reverbo the Human Boy, who was still waiting for the future to bring him his helium-filled pants, used to sail about the East Coast in the dirigible the Silver Pelican. So we have a history. We have a history.
Listen. For anybody out there listening right now, if you aren't being thoroughly entertained to the point that you can't pick up your a pen and a checkbook or key into PayPal, my God, Bob Kincaid is a master behind the microphone. There's a cue. Where do they send funds?
Because I didn't give out the address, did I? That would be the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And remember, checks and money orders should be made payable to the Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid never sees them, and that's the province of Boss Man Wayne, who puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the Horn echo chamber and hopes not to get bitten when he goes to reach for the occasional stray parcel of mail.
I don't know, man. I can't tell why I'm laughing so hard. It's either the tight underoos or this wonderful radio segment today.
Well, if you're squeaking, it's the underoos.
It also could be the cheap red wine. Let us not forget.
You know, I would absolutely love it someday to actually share a stage with you and just do this kind of improv together. I think it would.
But I think it would be best if we had seersucker and an actual tent and maybe an accordion player up at the front and everything was in black and white.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. We'll give them glasses before they enter the tent or something that'll just make everything monochromatic.
Oh, but that could be part of it too. It's the spirit is filled, is imbued us with monochromatism for the evening.
Monochromatosis.
Oh, you know,
the tendency to see everything in black and white, and particularly black in the case of Trump supporters.
See, we're getting somewhere.
Yes, because I wanted to come back
to God's line. it was in, 2 years ago. I said, if you are an, absolute idiot to compare any politician in this in the United States, no matter how foolhardy they are, to Adolf Hitler. Until Pearl Harbor Day 2015.
A date fully, which will live in infamy.
For those who manage the USS Yorktown retired, it will. My God, what we beheld.
Well, see, that was one of those things, Eric. Because I was down there. I made a specific pilgrimage to the Yorktown of sorts.
Right.
My son and I, back at the end of September, early October, because I specifically wanted to see what an Essex class aircraft carrier boiler room looked like. Because it's even though it was not the Essex, but it was in fact the Yorktown, I felt like the spirit of my father would be down there in a way, and it was. And so that place is special to me. It owns a special place in my heart. And I one of the things that after when I saw that was going to be going on, you have to pay to park and you have to pay to go aboard and all, so somebody's making some money somewhere. I mean, obviously it's for the upkeep and maintenance of the vessels because there's a destroyer next to it too, and that was fascinating. Oh my God, destroyers! Don't get me started. But.
No,
what were they thinking? No. What were they thinking?
By letting him on? Shame on them.
By letting him have his little Nuremberg rally on Pearl Harbor Day on a World War II aircraft carrier? What were they thinking?
And during his speech, invoking Japanese internment camps.
See, it's a gift that just keeps on giving.
Shame on the curatorial board.
If the Klan wants to have a rally on the Yorktown, do they just go, hey, do you have the fee? And they go, yeah, we got the fee. Well, come aboard.
No, they won't let the Klan on, but they'll allow them to speak when Donald Trump books them.
Well, see, I mean, I'm guessing the Nation of Islam probably could not have a gathering aboard the Yorktown.
They might not be able to have a gathering in the United States if we elect Donald Trump.
Well, no, they'll be busy getting deported.
Right. Oh, well, you're assuming they're not being exterminated.
I am an unrepentant optimist, Eric.
We at this point have to go there. We have to go there. You know,
we do.
I spent 4 years of my life. For those, if you're interested, I'm going to send your listeners to my Facebook writer page. Just
do,
enter
please.
My name, Eric Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. I've posted on there my teaser trailer for the screenplay I wrote called Litton's Passion. Nobody listening to us tonight knows who Hans Litton is, I promise you. But Hans Litton was the first victim of the Holocaust. It is one of the most critical stories of World War II, and almost nobody knows it. And I wrote a screenplay about it. 1931, Hans Litton in a courtroom interrogated Adolf Hitler and nearly had him indicted. It was a dramatic courtroom scene. Hans Litton was a tireless justice-seeking attorney who often worked pro bono on behalf of the poor and needy in Germany, and he was part of the intelligentsia. And he was singularly opposed to the brown shirts and the rise of Hitler. People forget how long it took for us to get from the rise of the Nazi Party to the Holocaust. It didn't happen overnight, folks.
No, it didn't. I mean, it wasn't necessarily part of their stated platform. They intimated it, but they didn't.
It was full of, hey, but Ribbentrop met Hitler in 1930. There was a commission in 1929 involving Litton, Carl von Ossietzky, who eventually won the Nobel Peace Prize, in a concentration camp, and Eric Musum opposing the rise of the brown shirts. You know, it's 1931, Hans Litton interrogated Hitler. It wasn't until 1933 that the Reichstag burned and Hitler finally took power. The night that the Reichstag burned, February 28th, 1933, Adolf Hitler rounded up the intelligentsia who had opposed him. The first person they arrested was Hans Litten, the man who had interrogated him in a courtroom. Other ones were playwrights like Eric Musum, Karl von Ossietzky, who was a peace worker, and about a group of about 20 or 30, and they held him in Spandau Prison in Berlin. So, folks, there were no concentration camps at first. There was a large prison in Berlin. It was called Spandau, and that's where these initial the ones that they knew would speak out the most and have the public ears, they arrested them immediately. And Hitler said to Hans Litten, "You're the first I will arrest and the last I'll ever let go." I mean, that's who this man was. Hans Litten opposed him, did everything he could to get Hitler to not rise to power, but nobody would listen to him. Right? Litten, over the course of years, went from concentration camp to concentration camp. His mother stayed in Germany, wrote a book called Mother Fights Hitler. The family fled, and she did everything to keep his son alive. And there's a great story of a number of British, well-known, Bertrand Russell, people fighting behind the scenes to get Hans Litten freed. Almost every bone in his body was broken over the course of years. He was transferred to Orenburg, to Lichtenberg, to Papenburg, Estvergen. Eventually, he was beaten bloody and hanged, and his murder called a suicide. He was murdered at Dachau in February 1938.
Wow, and the real carrying on hadn't even started yet.
Right, that's the point at which what we call the Holocaust began. So there was much. The concentration camps grew out of the fact that the political prisoners and people who wouldn't shut up were arresting were so big. Then they were like, well, now that we've got these small camps, who else should we throw in here? And that's where you see the final solution.
And it becomes a matter of what's the fancy word they use at the Harvard School of Business? It becomes a matter of an economy of scale.
Right. Well, it was convenient at that point. But there was this man, Hans Litten, and he stood against Adolf Hitler in 1931, in May of 1931, 2 years before the Reichstag burned and Hitler rose to power. He put Hitler in the docket and did everything he could to get that man indicted. He knew. And we could... Should I just read the letter?
Yes, please, do.
I'm going to read the letter.
Read the letter.
And for anybody out there, listen, I'm going to read this letter. I think it's an important letter. I'm going to finish the story of Hans Litten after that. Please consider giving some funds to Bob's show. Listen, he makes this program happen from tireless effort and work. The funds that you give today are going to go to good things. They're going to go to denouncing rat hole future dictator politicians like Donald Trump, but they're also going to go to building civilization. It's not just that we sit around and denounce. Standing up for justice also means standing for something positive. Anyways, if you're out there, please give. I'm going to read this letter, a faith commitment between me and you, listener, that you're going to give something tonight. Please, really, on behalf of Bob. So if you go to forwardprogressives.com, you can read my article, which is an open letter to the world regarding Donald Trump. P.S. Don't put off tomorrow. Dear planet Earth, beyond the borders of the fruited plain, you are probably struggling to identify where Uncle Sam's penchant for reality TV and WrestleMania begins and its Republican presidential candidate policies end. Sorry, most of the time, no obvious line separates the twain. Mike Gaza Gunpoint Huckabee jumps off the top rope and clotheslines the Iron Sheik. Where to begin? On behalf of all 322 million U.S. citizens, I apologize. Of course, a certain Republican presidential hopeful and his pitchfork minions would like to reduce that number to a comfortable 222 million white Americans. But who's counting? The only good news is that we don't know whether said candidate will export or exterminate those 100 million non-white Americans if given the chance. Yes, I actually took a step down the genocidal warning path. Why? Because a political personality worthy of crossing the Godwin line is finally in our midst. 2 years ago, I wrote, to compare any U.S. politician to Adolf Hitler is simply idiotic and downgrading to the cause. Well, I was wrong. I didn't realize Donald Trump was capable of transforming his charismatic Gordon Gekko, I suck the teats of mammon personality, into a viable White House frontrunner. None of us did. We were convinced that the United States, while embarrassingly capable of electing a W, was yet impervious to outright Nazism, Stalinism, and all the trappings of a good old-fashioned rape of Nanking and Cold War puppet dictatorship. Trump began his campaign six months ago with attention-getting overtures of fear-mongering and racism, which the civilized among us categorized as David Dukeian, yet merely rejected with eye rolls and murmurs. What was once a pro wrestling stunt has now morphed into millions of front yard vote for Trump signs. The Joker is now the juggernaut, and we are all to blame. We watched the frog boil in the kettle. This past Monday, on a retired aircraft carrier in South Carolina, candidate Trump delivered a goose-stepping speech that even his Republican presidential playmates finally had to admit went too far. Donald J. Trump, quote, Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice. We have no choice. End quote. There, finally, was the line between right-wing debate entertainment and prospective dictatorship. And candidate Trump, referencing himself e'er so humbly in the third person, drew it with a big stick in the sand. Not one other Republican candidate has dared cross the Trump line. Jeb Bush said Donald Trump is unhinged. Marco Rubio called it offensive and outlandish. Senator Lindsey Graham called candidate Trump downright dangerous. Meanwhile, Ted Cruz spoke in tongues and searched for demons under Capitol Hill bushes. And at this point in the article, I've provided a link. By the way, you can watch Trump's full Führer speech here. The anti-Muslim remarks begin at the 30-minute mark. While Republican candidates rejected Trump's hate-dripping statement wholesale, the problem is that voters aboard the retired USS Yorktown stood and raucously cheered. In fact, millions are standing and cheering Donald Trump, who continues to lead most national and primary Republican candidacy polls by wide margins. As I stated above, 2 years ago, I took a pass on comparing the brown shirts of the 1920s with the Tea Party. But it would seem that we've finally reached the point where we are just a runway away from a Donald J. Trump collection Jugendbund shorts fashion show. Candidate Trump has handed out the pitchforks and lit the populist torches to millions. He is doing the good work of God and the global military-industrial complex. But to civilized folks like me, like Bob Kincaid, like you, listener, like Hussam Ailush from the Council on American-Islamic Relations, Trump is doing the work of ISIS, quote-unquote. This, then, is where you come in, citizens and reporters and leaders of faraway lands. While it is generally impolitic for one nation to interfere in the political affairs of another nation, despite the fact that the U.S. may have engaged in a bit of regime meddling in your neck of the global woods, the case of candidate Trump presents a clear and present exception. In short, speak up often and loudly. Don't tell us who to vote for, but insist we not vote for Donald Trump. Wave travel and trade sanctions in front of our noses. Threaten to take back Christoph Waltz and the Statue of Liberty. Do whatever it takes. Heck, promise to strive endlessly to make soccer our number one sport.
I'm sorry.
More seriously, force our eyes open with toothpicks and provide clear reminders of how the bloodthirsty and iron-fisted dictators of your nations rose to power. Replay us their campaign speeches. Show us how crowds rallied around cries to root out the enemy. Overload every newspaper and radio signal and television and electronic device and social media newsfeed. Oh, world, what is the point of reminding ourselves time and again, as we have for the past century, that those who ignore history are destined to repeat it, if we don't actually act when that history unfolds right before our very eyes? Candidate Trump is evil. Hell, the whole damned Republican Party deserves to be locked in the Hague. Trump represents the basest form of barbarism. He and his followers are a clear and present danger to global civilization. And we need your help, world, to make this clear, crystal clear, to millions of deceived U.S. citizens. 2016 matters. Civilization hangs in the balance. Please do not wait for the frog to boil. Sincerely, Civilized Minds from Sea to Shining City.
Bravo, bravo. A tour de force, a pièce de résistance, beyond a shadow of a doubt. I'm not being a smartass. It really is, Eric. And it really is time for the world to step up on this, you know, and say what? We're going to close the borders to the United States. We're not going to allow you in. You don't get to go anywhere.
Do something. Threaten us. Threaten us with trade sanctions. Threaten us with travel restrictions. Keep saying what will happen should Donald Trump become president, and remind us what it was like to live under Stalin, under Mussolini, under Hitler, under Ceausescu, under Duvalier, on and on and on. My only follow-up to that article, my first follow-up thought, is so I got a bit lucky today. It's had a viral run so far. It's been read in over 50 countries.
Wow.
Canada, United Kingdom, Mexico, Australia, Poland, United Arab Emirates, Thailand, Switzerland, Sweden, Spain, South Africa, Singapore, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Puerto Rico, not really a foreign country, but
no.
Portugal.
Not that Peru, the teabaggers know, so, you know.
Yeah, Norway, Nigeria, New Zealand, Kosovo, Japan, Italy, Israel, Ireland, Croatia, Costa Rica, Brunei, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Belize, Belgium, Austria, Argentina, Afghanistan, and on.
Russia? Has it been read in Russia?
It has. There it is. It's
okay, right. And I asked that for a reason, Eric, because I've got a Putin story. You know how how T-Rump said that he would get along ever so well with Putin, because you know I'm a fabulous negotiator, right? Yeah. So after the shooting down of the offending Russian 1960s, 1970s bomber somewhere over Turkish airspace, which they say they weren't in, but the Turks say they were, and there's this one little nipple of Turkey that sticks into Syria where you can just go, and the next thing you know, the surface to airs are gone, and they're right. And since this is Wednesday, he gave his State of the Nation address, Vladimir Putin did, last Thursday.
Missed it.
I don't know how. It was about 19 hours long. You know, they get kind of chatty, those Russian dictators. He declared that the leaders of Turkey will regret shooting down their fighter jet. Although, if you look at the history of that particular aircraft, getting shot down is one of the things that it does best. There are kids in Afghanistan who shot those things down with slingshots.
With slingshots?
Yeah.
With kites.
because he likes to court the religious vote, and because he's multicultural and wants to promote diversity inside Russia, Vlad doubled down a little bit and said, Allah decided to punish Turkey leaders by making them lose their minds.
Meanwhile, I forgot the Turkey secular nation in Middle East only.
Exactly. So we got it on both sides of the Atlantic. Allah made them to lose their minds because I am devoted follower of Allah.
That's actually
no.
Really
that would be
point.
Devoted. You have to say devoted when you're doing your cheesy Russian accent. I am devoted follower of Allah.
This actually presents an interesting, you know. So we all, you know, the care. You know, of course, we're flying around with, you know, Hitler is the easy target in the dictator comparison world. But there are other kinds of bloodthirsty, ruthless dictators. You know, you can go with it's unfortunately a big a la carte menu to choose from. The Idi Amin's, the Ceausescu's. You know, the unfortunate thing is if you go to Wikipedia dictator, you're going to get you can actually alphabetize the list. There's an alphabetize function. That's how many dictators are. Well, Putin's on that list too. This isn't.
Yeah. And so is a photograph of a particularly vulgar spud that was found in the soil of Idaho somewhere. But that's another thing entirely.
That said, there are all sorts of kinds of horrible dictators.
Including brutal dictators who tried to kill my daddy.
What I'm trying to say is that we are justified in crossing the Godwin line and invoking Hitlerian policies and Nazism. And when you do that, at this point, what you're really saying is, listen, pal, I think you have the genuine perspective to walk into the White House and become any one of these, you know, and model yourself after any one of these horrible people who brought nothing but death and destruction and militant control to their people. We just know that's going to happen. You know it. You can feel it in your bones. And it's time.
As our buddy the Angry Indian points out, Eric, Hitler stands out because he was, and I'm reading verbatim here, Hitler stands out because he was a white Christian German, nothing else.
Well, he was a failed painter, don't forget.
You don't make this noise, this kind of noise. You're a history nerd. I'm a history nerd. We're history nerds here. I mean, this is a safe space for us to work on this kind of thing. How many people talk about King Leopold of Belgium?
They should.
But that would be none.
Right, but you should put King Leopold on a par with Hitler. King Leopold was as ruthless a human being as ever lived. His oh my God, his slaughter of the people.
Yeah, but see, he killed dark-skinned people, so, you know, pass.
They weren't even at slave level in his mind. They were fungi. They were artistic.
The people of Congo were less human than a serf was to a 16th century Tsar.
They considered Africans unicellular life forms, and that's the level of King Leopold. You know, they were no different than the trees harvested for lumber.
And see, that's the reason, and I think you were right in that piece that you wrote 2 years ago, Eric, saying, yeah, I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon and violate Godwin's law for a bunch of people with Lipton tea bags hanging from their hats. I understand that. I may have been guilty of it, but I think you were right, because see, we do to use a metaphor, we devalue the currency when we call everybody who ever delivered us a cold cup of coffee a Nazi.
Correct.
And there are a lot of people who do that.
Right. You're right, because yes, there are people that run around and call every, and then all of a sudden it means nothing. And that's a linguistic fact. I mean, If you call everybody something, it's like the F-bomb, right? If you use the F-bomb as your principal descriptor, adjective, adverb, preposition, noun, verb, the word has zero meaning.
No. We have a few practitioners who work in the F-bomb like Michelangelo worked in marble, trust me. I mean, Carol Baker, the Queen of the Minions, the Angry Indian, it's like sculpture. It really, really is.
Well, yeah, but that's her primary color. But she's dedicated her life to the F-bomb, right? There's your guy at the bar, has no brain, and he just, everything's F-bomb. Right.
Well, and the polar opposite of that is, of course, the clip.
And by the way, that cry of F-bomb, my mighty Norwegian forest cat Thor has come into the room.
No worries. I heard him in the background.
He gets excited when I start floating around the F-bomb.
Our Himalayan chocolate point is not allowed in the studio, but she would very much like to be. But she talks. And no one talks in here but me. Wow, a little bit of ego there, huh? In all seriousness, last night, Eric, I ran the audio of people being interviewed outside the Patriots Point Park, and they were trying, because there was a microphone stuck in the face, and because they were birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, etc. They tried to sound really smart when asked, "Would you still support Donald Trump, despite what he just said?" And of course, there was and this is in your state, okay? I mean, we all understand.
I know the state of confusion.
Yeah, but there was the one guy who said, "Well, you know, I say just send them all back because it's too hard to vent them." And I've watched that video a dozen times if I've seen it once, and I always come back to the guy who says it's too hard to vent a Muslim, and I can see him in my mind's eye. I can see him watching various and sundry right-wing, white-wing Republican presidential candidates saying that the government isn't doing a good enough job of vetting of these here. And he thinks a vet is somebody who is in the military like me. I think they say invent. They say invent. So, and that makes sense to him, to vent a Muslim. Okay.
Right. The problem is that you got to stick him all in the HVAC, and there's a limited pipe space or ventilation. You know what? It's kind of a quadrilateral thing, rhomboid sort of shape of thing, and you can't get 100 million non-white Americans in there. You got to vent them over time. Good God.
Yeah, and of course, I had the Robert in Australia provided me with some numbers that were rather shocking. Do you have any idea how much it would cost to round everybody up that Donald Trump doesn't like and send them somewhere else?
Trust me,
the number is huge.
A trillion.
A trillion.
Oh, I don't. I lost the prices right. I went over. Yeah, if I thought it was 5 trillion, it's a bargain at one, right? I mean, but this is what I said in my article. There are 322 million of us. 100 million of us are not Caucasian. And he wants to get rid of all of them. And his minions, I don't know if he wants to get rid of all of them.
322 million, 100 million do not belong. Which ones do not belong?
His minions want to get rid of all of them, and he knows that.
And that's the other thing, Eric, because I've got you, you're sort of captive here, and I think we need to...
Well, it's not like I can walk out in my burning and feel the burn under.
Well, precisely my point. So you have to take in. Okay, so this is and this comes out of California, you know, liberal California. Right. And I'm not making fun of California. I'm not. It's just if you ask somebody.
Can you do that again?
Liberal California. There were some Muslims, two Muslims pray in a park. No, midget walks into a bar.
At six. At ten.
No, so there are a couple of Muslims praying in a park when a white woman, one presume, when and I think one may safely presume to be a, you know, a Trump supporter.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, the apple falleth not far from the tree, and by their fruit ye shall know them, right?
Yeah.
So she stops to begin haranguing them. This white woman does. And it's really weird. I queued this story up earlier today in advance of the show. I wanted to get it just right. And it ain't there anymore. But that's okay, because we don't necessarily need the audio. The woman began haranguing these people for, you know, praying to their God. Now, you know where I am on the whole worth of praying kind of thing, but...
But you ain't harangued me yet.
I ain't harangued you none at all. And so, one of the... she walks up and starts just giving hell to these two people who were not interfering with her in any way, shape, form, or fashion. The story can be had over at Arab American News. Hmm. Samir Hijazi had the story. It goes back to, well, you know, yesterday. And she just starts screeching at these people. Those people, you're torturing. They're going to go to heaven, and you're going to go to hell for torturing people. You worship Satan. No, really. And this is, of course, Merkin. Castro Valley, California.
And you know what? If this was Europe, she'd be in jail. That is a hate crime. I just want to point that out. I mean, I know we worship freedom of speech. But in Europe, they've been through something called the Holocaust. You know, of course, we've been through something called the Native American.
Yeah, the Native American genocide. Right. I was thinking the exact same thing. Are you still there, Eric? Oh, okay.
Do that to somebody. Yeah. We're not really going to let you do that.
So it was Sunday. It was December the 6th. And this woman shows up. And she sees this Muslim and his buddy praying on the grass. And what he was doing is he was, the one guy was waiting in the car for his three friends to finish their prayers. And the woman's name, by the way, is Denise Slater, walked up to them and she was saying, "Allah is Satan and you're all murderers." And the other guy responds by saying, "But wait, we believe in Jesus. We love Jesus." Because, you know, Muslims do. They revere him right. As a prophet second only to Muhammad. Right? You know, and whereas I believe that there is no God and Bill Hicks is his prophet. We believe in Jesus. We love Jesus. And she keeps screaming and keeps screaming. And eventually the police come and... In front of park police, she physically assaults these people, screaming at them about how they're the people you tortured. They're going to spend eternity in heaven. You're very deceived by Satan. Your mind has been taken over, brainwashed, and you have nothing but hate, nothing but hate. Now imagine the irony of this. And the park ranger comes up to her and says, "Ma'am, this is inappropriate." And she said, "It is inappropriate. You're right, for somebody to tape record me."
Oh, my God.
And of course, Mr. Al-Bashari said, "I never thought this would ever happen to me here." It's a very uncomfortable feeling. Well, congratulations, Mr. Albasari, for simply saying that it was uncomfortable. It's freaking terrifying because there are millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of these people, Eric.
And it's immoral. It's immoral. I mean, he's being I don't know what he's being. He's being a kind-hearted.
Well, what he's doing is he's
I know it's radio and you don't want crickets, but there's just you just come to an impasse where you think about it so much and it so defies communist senses. It so defies critical thinking. It so defies reason. You know, often I save myself a lot of migraines by no longer participating in conversations and dialogue with people where our foundational differences are disparate.
Understood.
I'll give it a try. And then when I recognize that the person, you know, mistakes his wife for a hat, as Oliver Sacks would put it, or is completely blinded to fundamentalism, I have to disengage in dialogue. And take a totally different, if I really care about the person, I have the time and effort, I have to engage in a different kind of strategy. They're blind. I mean, you know, in the case of somebody who actually sees delusions, you know.
Yeah, from the Christian standpoint, from the Christian standpoint, you forgive them and say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Well, no, but if you're engaging with somebody who's literally seeing delusions, you have to medicate them and realize that, you know, there's no point in dialoguing with them. In the case of somebody who's completely blinded by fundamentalist hate, be it a Christian, by the way, a Muslim, a Jew, Buddhist.
Fundamentalism is fundamentalism is fundamentalism is fundamentalism, to paraphrase
right.
Gertrude Stein.
You have to engage them in a different manner. It's not about the issue anymore. It's not about individual issues anymore. It's about a general worldview. I was as fundamentalist as Ted Cruz. I was as unhinged as any of the craziest crazy evangelical fundamentalist leaders we see out there, the Jerry Falwells or the, you know, just secular Rush Limbaugh. That was my worldview once upon a time. And it was because of an anthropology professor when I was young who took me aside and started to plant seeds in my mind. He didn't engage me in individual subjects. He understood that it was a worldview issue that he needed to tackle. And so what we have is Donald Trump saying, aha, you know, I can, you know, I've got all these billions, but I could become president. I could become leader. There are 30, 40, 50, 60 million blindly deceived, skewed worldview citizens out there with the power to vote. Apply my world wrestling's. All I have to do is employ my world WrestleMania rhetorical skills upon them to get them to put me in a place of ultimate power.
Well, that's true, but I want to draw a larger point as well, not a larger point, but a different point. And that is this, you know, you talk about disengagement. We have reached a point in this country where you can't. These individuals who were practicing their religion without imposing it on anybody else, were not able to withdraw. Because, see, people like Denise Slater, Selder, whatever, she has been empowered. Okay? She has been empowered by Trump and by the rest of these right-wing pigs. It's not. I think we do a disservice, Eric, if we say that it's all Trump. Because it's Huckabee too, and it's Cruz, Ben Carson. But these people have been empowered to go forth and in a sort of sickening, perverse evangelism, assault people.
Yeah, they're empowered by
doing things that is perfectly legal to do in this country.
It's a sick cycle, right? So you had a. You know, it wasn't 7 years ago. You had a lot of conservative Republicans that were actually working together with Democrats on a number of programs. I can think of the one that I worked for in South Carolina. It was a large statewide academic development program. The Speaker of the House, a very conservative man, was the champion of the program. Right. The program was birthed through the idea of one of the most outspoken Democrats in the state and a Democrat governor. Right. They worked together, multi-billion-dollar program to bring jobs and to develop the economy and academic research in South Carolina. And the champion of this program was the Republican Speaker of the House. Then the Tea Party took over. All right. Then the Tea Party took all these seats, and the champion of this program could no longer support it because he recognized that his own power was in jeopardy if he didn't go further to the right and outright reject things and programs and policies.
Like learning. Reject learning.
But this is what happened in this country. And so that's why I said earlier that I don't think if you put Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, okay, just those two who are governors, right? If you put them in a room, they understand how a state operates. Are they conservative, and do I consider them enemies of civilization? In many respects, yes. But they understand how government works, and they're not as insane as the part they've been forced to play since the Tea Party took over. They really aren't. But I mean, guilty of playing the part that they're playing. I guarantee you Mike Huckabee is not as unhinged as he comes off. He's unhinged, but he's not as...
No. He is what Twain called a gospel sharp.
Correct.
Because in 19th century parlance, a sharp was a confidence man. A sharp was...
Right.
A huckster. Yeah.
But that's exactly it. If you put him in a room, I guarantee you he's not the saint that he comes off as. I guarantee you he's not half the fundamentalist he comes off. I really think so. But they've all been forced to come far to the right, not just because in essence of the Tea Party, right? But now Trump comes along and goes, hell no, I'm going to take the Tea Party even further right. And guess what? They'll follow me.
And they did.
And they did. And they have. And they did. And they raucously cheered when he invoked Japanese internment camps, when he invoked a ban on Muslims, when he more or less said this country only belongs to the 222 million white Americans that live in it. Period. Everybody else can, you know, let's venom. Oh, Bob. But, you know, this is a time of action, and that's why my voice feels the way it does. I've been typing so madly I've lost my voice.
Well, before you lose it entirely, because I think these two do sort of run together. Can we take a moment to consider Robert Deere, 57-year-old Robert Louis Deere Jr., who he had an appearance in court in Colorado Springs today. This is the guy who shot up the Planned Parenthood.
Right.
Whom the FBI has
Sorry, there are so many shootings these days. I can't.
I know. But you know, who shot up Planned Parenthood? Who murdered? Killed three people. Shot many others. He was arraigned on 179 criminal counts today. Yeah. And whom the FBI to this very moment still refuses to refer to as a terrorist. Okay. The man and woman in California, Muslims, definitely terrorists.
I mean, I would like to see the memo that makes these things happen.
Oh, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Absolutely, wouldn't you?
I mean, there's a memo. It's on paper somewhere.
Sure it is.
I really want to see it.
And so this guy shows up in court today and stands up in front of the court with his court-appointed lawyer there, and you've probably never been in this situation, but if you've got, you know, you're in court, you've got your client, And you
I don't know, Bob.
and you explained the process to them. This is only an arraignment. The only thing you need to say is not guilty.
Right.
And then we'll go from there, and we'll work on the case, and we'll see how it falls out. All you got to do is say not guilty, because the lawyer does all the other talking.
Right. Just shut up.
Yeah. And so they get to this thing.
When I stick my hand up your derriere, I'm gonna just puppet the words.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly. You know. Ixnay on the ilty gay, okay? So it's going to be it's just an arraignment in Colorado Springs today, Eric. And Robert Louis Deere, who did not die in a hail of gunfire as as Mr. Farouk and Ms. Malik did. The judge says, oh, welcome, okay, we're here, God bless America. Okay, for next case, people of the state of Colorado versus Robert Louis Deere Jr. And the lawyer says, Your Honor, Mr. Deere appears in person by counsel, and the court says, well, the court recognizes the lawyer J. Noble Daggett, that noble pleader, as counsel for Mr. Deere. Mr. Deere, you are charged with 179 criminal counts, 3 counts of murder, 160 counts of mayhem, and 4 counts of stream littering. And how do you plead? And that's where the defendant goes, not guilty, Your Honor. And you've had a successful arraignment, but not for Mr. Deere. Mr. Deere said, I am guilty. There will be no trial. I am a warrior for the babies.
Oh, my.
At which point counsel says,
Manta?
Your Honor, can I approach the bench? And all the people in the courtroom can see is the guy walking up, leaning over onto the judge's bench. The judge is going to, because the judge is kind of taken aback because this offends the dignity of his court. And the only thing that nobody can hear anything, but all they can do, all they can see is the defense counsel pointing his finger at the side of his head and making a circular motion. And so, even though the guy walks up and says, I am guilty, there will be no trial, I am a warrior for the babies. Proud son of South Carolina, by the way, I might add, Robert Louis Deere Jr.
Oh, did you have to?
Sorry! And so immediately, because he walks up and pleads guilty for attacking a Planned Parenthood facility and killing a veteran and a police officer and a woman who was there simply to be supportive of her friend, because he walks up and pleads guilty for doing all of that, the court goes, obviously we're going to send you away for some mental competency testing. That's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to accept your guilty plea, sir. I'm a warrior. But the thing is, this proud son of South Carolina, he got it wrong. Under the best circumstances, he got it wrong, because of course that particular Planned Parenthood performed no abortion services whatsoever. And even if it had, that then what he would have had to say, and maybe this is what proves he's Azy Cray, dangerously day Azy Cray. He should have said, "I am a warrior for the fetuses, Your Honor, there will be no trial. God bless the fetuses."
He should have said, "I done, Your Honor, I done vented Planned Parenthood." Oh my God, Bob!
I know. Meanwhile, Ms. Carol, Queen of the Minions, made an observation a couple of minutes ago. She said, when you were talking about your experience getting away from fundamentalism, and I think all of us who did get free had something similar. She said, so, Eric was cured by a liberal college professor who poisoned his mind. That is why college should be free for everybody.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is that Dr. Hurd, James Hurd, Bethel University, was an anthropology professor at one of the most conservative schools in Minnesota. But He's a very wise man.
Well, she continues and notes about the baggers. You know the old saying about dancing with the one that brung you? The baggers broke that rule. The GOP is finding out that their bagger dates are crack whores drinking all the booze, swinging from the chandeliers, and taking a dump in the middle of the living room. Now the GOP is trying to explain to the country how it's not their fault. The country got trashed. But, you know, they brung them. Own it.
You know what that reminds me of? You know what Dorothy Parker once said about horticulture?
But you can't make her think?
That's right. You can bring a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
But I mean,
by the way, there was a couple walked into a bar.
Horse walks into a bar, bartender looks at him and says, why the long face? Just to kind of put a pretty tidy little bow on all of this, Eric. You seem to be in a space similar to mine, because I said openly last night, during the entire time that Osama bin Laden was still alive, I never once was afraid I was going to go over to the local Wally World, for a box of Twinkies or Ho-Hos or bag of Raisinets, what have you. I just try to stay out of Wally World. Who am I kidding? But I was never afraid that a 6'6" tall, Arab radical with a portable dialysis machine was gonna turn my Walmart into a smoking heap of rubble. I cannot say that about these Trumpistas.
Right. Oh, listen.
I am afraid. I don't feel like I have to turn in my man card or anything for this. I am afraid of these people because, like you, I know history.
I'm concerned. I live in a neighborhood with maybe 20 Muslim families within a 2 football fields of where I am. I'm concerned for every single one of those families.
Are they making you live under the Sharia law, Eric, already? Are they?
You know what they all are? They're all PhD students. They're all PhDs. They're all professors or professors in waiting. They are the most learned people in my neighborhood. They are friends of my daughter. They take me in. They offer me meals. I have been to mosque with them. Again, if you go to my Facebook writer page.
Oh, it's too late. They done got you. I'm sorry. I'm doing this shtick. I apologize.
No. If you go to my Facebook writer page, Eric Bjorn, A-R-I-K-B-J-O-R-N, a couple articles down, you're going to find an article about the time I recently went to my neighborhood mosque and stood in solidarity with them. These are the brightest people in my neighborhood, the people I trust most to be with my daughter and a play date with her friends, are Muslims. That's just the people that I'm most concerned about are some of the declared racists around me.
Right, you mean the guy two doors down with the Confederate flag there on his mailbox, that guy?
The people who have said things to me in supposed confidence because I'm a big white guy, things that I couldn't imagine would come out of a human being's mouth. Right, you're right. Those are the people I don't know. It is the time. We're beyond the time of talk. It is now the time. We're beyond postulation. We are at the time of denouncement. We must denounce this wherever we see it. We must stop in our tracks. Call the turd a turd.
Just because there's a couple of peanuts in it does not mean it's a baby Ruth.
Or corn kernels.
Yeah.
I mean, you have got to stop, and you cannot roll your eyes anymore. You cannot murmur. You have to stop and call the thing out, denounce it, and say, I stand for something better. I stand for civilization. It's just where we're at.
And meanwhile, the other side of that is, that, of course, all of these goobers. We are in a – because you've heard it – we are in a war for the heart of civilization. Yeah, as if, Cletus. What have you contributed to civilization lately?
Well,
I discovered I can spray WD-40 on my cut. It'll help you heal.
And by civilization, we stand against the fornicating Greek philosophers like Aristotle, Plato, and Socrates. Those were the fornicating homosexuals.
Homosexuals, absolutely.
We stand against, civilization stands against that.
We just can't.
You know that's true.
We just can't resist, can we, Eric? No, see, I mean, you talk about raising your daughter. Some good up-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, lard-eating, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian wants your kid to come over for a play date. You have to ask him, well, tell me, are there any firearms in your home?
Right. And you know who I'm not?
Oh, of course they is. Why is it a marking?
Of course it is. We got Muslim neighbors.
Yeah, well, okay, my kid's going to play with the Muslim kids who don't have firearms in their home.
Or even if they do.
And that's the kind of denunciation you're talking about, isn't it?
Right, right. You know, it absolutely is. We're just at that point. You can't mumble anymore. You can't roll your eyes. You can't say anything off to the side. You have to take the stand that Hans Litten took in 1929, and you have to say, I don't care if I'm outnumbered 301. I will denounce it. I will not let it stand.
Not in my name.
Right. And that's what this letter was. And it was also saying, world, listen, yeah, we got the big fat wallet. That's us. Stand against us if you feel the need. Do not hesitate to tell us off. Do not hesitate to start treating us like the absurd nation you all think that we are in moments like this. And we are absurd.
Well, we are traveling down a road toward becoming, and becoming may even be the wrong verb, a pariah state. And if by some chance this man manages to achieve the White House, we will be a pariah state.
The fact that he's achieved 30 million, 40 million, 50 million devoted followers makes us a pariah state in many respects. Listen, the world couldn't believe the world was a Gog at Sarah Palin, right? There honestly was. Donald Trump is 50 times exponentially what Sarah Palin was. Donald Trump is an extremely intelligent man. Sarah Palin would have spent an entire presidential term, or vice presidential term, just polishing her fancy boots. She couldn't think her way outside of a bag. Donald Trump is a very, very intelligent human being. He has played everybody so well. He's a master, and that's why.
Okay, so let me check in with you in this regard, Eric. There are those, and I've heard from them on this program, who hold that Donald Trump is some sort of stealth. He's like the worm in Star Trek: Wrath of Khan. Yeah, Captain, he was terrible. They put things in our ears. but he's secretly working to show us what the Republican Party really is, so that Hillary can march to a glittering triumph on January 20th, 2017.
Wait, are these the same people that say Henry Kissinger is the Antichrist? I just want to.
Well, no, he is. Henry Kissinger is the Antichrist.
Oh, right, right, right. Sorry, sorry. It's just not the same when you're not an accent, Bob.
But, well, I know. But, you know, when Count Dicula says that Trump's gone too far, I mean, that's like criticizing Renfield for eating fucking bugs. I mean,
no, it really was. Oh, my God, when we heard those words, we all went, no, I'm sorry, I just can't agree with the man.
No, it's time to get out the brown liquor now.
So I'm gonna.
You know what? I figured it out though. That was Count. That was that decent person's heart beating in Count Dicula's chest, bleating out a desperate cry for help.
Yeah. I think it was Voldemort attached to the back of his head, finally speaking common sense.
No, that's not. That's not who we are.
Carol Baker just sniffled an F bomb.
Exactly. That's not who we are as a country. If we get rid of all the Muslims, who will we waterboard?
I'm going to finish on this. Hans Litten died at the hands of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, and ultimately all of his hard work, all of the hard work of Lord Allen, of Hurtwood, of Bertrand Russell, of Irmgard Litten, so many others, to free him, didn't work. He was murdered. He remains, to this day, the first victim of the Holocaust. He was the first person arrested the night of the Reichstag. He was the most hated of all of the concentration camp prisoners, personally hated by Hitler. His mother, Lord Allen of Hurtwood, helped her escape Germany at that point after he was murdered in Dachau. And she came to England and wrote a book called The Mother Fights Hitler. Her name is Irmgard, Irmgard Litten. And she did radio broadcasts for the rest of the war, telling the story, her story. I bought a copy of A Mother Fights Hitler off the internet. And I have a rare book collection, and cleaning up the dust jacket and covering it. And I removed the dust jacket, and I could see just on the end papers, covered by the dust jacket, faintly in pencil, a message. This copy was signed by Irmgard Litten. For all I know, it's the only copy in the world signed by her. Never been able to find another copy.
Wow.
It's dated December 7th, 1942. And I'm reading it. I'm holding it in my hands right now, and I'm reading it. It says, "Fight Hitler while you still have time." Irmgard Litten. December 7, 1942. As far as I know, this is the only copy in existence that's signed. Irmgard Litten is the son of the first victim of the Holocaust. Hans Litten opposed Adolf Hitler 2 years before he rose to power and did everything he could to stop the man. At that point, it was too late. There are many, many similarities between Adolf Hitler, the rise of the brown shirts, and the Nazi Party, and what we're seeing today. Now, I don't know that we're going there necessarily, but all of the telltale signs are there. We always say to ourselves, do not forget history. Remember the lesson of history so that
those who forget history, those who do not learn from history, will be doomed
destined to repeat. Well, there's no point in saying that phrase if when it presents itself in front of you, you do nothing about it. We are no longer at the time of rolling our eyes, of murmuring and mumbling. Fight Hitler while you still can, 1942. Okay? It was too late. An intelligent nation fell to populist, charismatic calls for murder. An entire intelligent, reason-born nation.
The most advanced, culture in Europe at that time, as the angry Indian pointed out.
Without Germany, there is no enlightenment. Immanuel Kant and all the horrible, boring philosophy and mathematics of the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
But also the great culture, the great music, the great art.
Yeah, no Goethe.
Goethe, Nietzsche, etc. Etc. wasn't German, but he was Italian.
I once stayed in a mansion in Germany. No kidding. I once stayed in a mansion in Germany in which a young man, a dissident, scion of a wealthy family, carved a love poem in his bedroom window with a diamond. And while I was there, I was shown that poem, and that family became famous for being, and I forget what the word was, but they were thrice denounced by the Kaiser, they were denounced by Hitler, and they were denounced once before the Kaiser for having unorthodoxly democratic views of human rights. Yeah.
I'm pretty proud to be a member of that family.
Yeah, no kidding.
But if we don't, I mean, so here we are. But here it is in front of us. Look, I'm holding in my hand this copy. This it's a piece of history. And so I personally have a moral imperative, Bob. I have a moral imperative. I can't just stand by anymore. I have to do everything that I can because I'm responsible for what I know. I spent 4 years of my life researching that time. 2 years ago, I said, do not ever cross the Godwin line. But something happened this week. It was the sum
Well, you didn't cross it. That's the thing, though. Eric, you didn't cross it.
Right. No, that's a good point. But the sum of 6 months of that man's campaign leads us to the point where we can't. And it's not just him. It's everything underneath him. Ted Cruz is Donald Trump. Every single one of these Republican
candidates. And this is something I've been.
Is a Trump.
This is something I've been hammering on for two nights now. And that's this. To the extent that any of Trump's support has fallen off, especially if you look at the Iowa numbers, the beneficiary of it has been Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz.
Listen, Ted Cruz is far worse than Donald Trump.
Yeah, but the thing is, he is benefiting from this. And in the piece that you wrote at ForwardProgressives.com, you said that Ted Cruz was all speaking in tongues. Well, actually, when he was called on it, he said two things. Well, that's and they were this. One, he said, well, that's not my policy. And the second thing he said is, I don't think I'm called upon to join the chorus of those denouncing Mr. Trump.
Right. And this morning on NPR, he said, evolution is a pseudoscience and global warming is a pseudoscience.
But those two phrases, that's not my policy. You know, that opens the door to, no, my policy's much worse.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that.
I don't think I'm called upon to join the chorus of those denouncing Mr. Trump. Well, yes, really, you are.
Well,
you are called upon.
Not if you believe that it's not stringent enough.
And that's precisely my point. And by the way, since we've reached denouncing mode, let me suggest that you go forth and use the magic of the internet. You might have to go through a few pages, but look up, because this maybe a lot of America, but this is prayer meeting Wednesday, so we can do that. A lot of America goes, well, you know, that's just religion, that's just his faith. But there is actual video out there, because I played the audio of it on this program a year or two ago, of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. I mean, I used that long, almost Homeric reference to him, you know, fleet-footed Achilles. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz. For a reason. Because in this video, you can see Rafael Eduardo Cruz anointing Rafaelito's head and declaring him, him King of America.
I know. I'm telling you, there was absolutely no hyperbole in my statement a minute ago when I said Ted Cruz is far worse than Donald Trump. Donald Trump, for all intents and purposes, is a Stalin. Is a secular dictator in the making. Ted Cruz
is an Ayatollah.
Is an Ayatollah
with a law degree from Harvard and a loving cup from winning from being first in the debating society. That should
and these
give...
are our two leading candidates, followed by a man who thinks the pyramids were granaries.
Hobbins in Gehat Hobbins Gehorten sein, yeah.
In theory.
I know. Eric, thank you. As I said to Carol last night, thank you for joining me out here on the ledge. Because mostly I just sit here by myself taking in the view, but it's nice to have some company once in a while.
I know. I hope you don't mind my feel the burn under ruse. I
mean, no. There are so many people that are so stoked about that.
Bob, my eyes are up here. My eyes are up here, Bob.
Sorry. how am I supposed to not?
You know, I've got some. I can't wait to, of course, keep doing Pastor Pillow with you every once in a while. But I've got some big news coming up on the horizon the next couple of months. It's going to be a very exciting few months for those of us dedicated to building civilization. There's a lot of good happening out there too. We got to denounce the bad, but we got to build something too. So I'm in a building mode.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's going to be an exciting couple months. I got a new book coming out in a few weeks, Waiting for Civilization. You can go to my Amazon page, Eric Bjorn, see the books that I have out there. Again, I got some articles out on Forward Progressives. And
you are a much more diligent and a much more disciplined writer than I am. I know that the only way to write is to get up every day and write, and sometimes I just can't. And that's why I open the mic at 3 o'clock, at 6 o'clock in the evening, and just the only way to talk is to walk into the studio in the evening and just open up the mic and talk for 3 hours.
It's again, Bob. I'm gonna close for the second time. This is a good Minnesota exit. Minnesota, when you leave somebody's house, you close at least 5 to 6 times, shake their hand. Seven.
Absolutely. It's been lovely.
Talk about the weather. 8. Oh, for sure. You want another cup of coffee and some coffee cake? Oh, no. Maybe a plate of lutefisk. Oh, yeah, for sure. You betcha. But, Bob, you do a lot of great things. I'm honored. I said it in a Facebook post earlier this week that you and Jason Dye and some other – since this writing project began of mine 3 years ago, I really got serious about writing about politics and religion, trying to reach people on a national level. I'm really honored that I've met you. I'm honored that I've met Carol F. Baum Baker and people like you. We stand for justice. We stand for justice in very different places in the country. We haven't physically met. We will someday.
I absolutely believe that.
But I feel like I know you, and I'm glad that I can call you a friend. I can call you a confidant. I can call you a fellow citizen, a comrade.
You can call me when the bar opens.
And I can count on you to pick me up when it closes. But I am grateful for all you do in the name of justice, and you work really hard, and it's not lucrative. It never is. Hans Litten was a very poor man, this great attorney. There's no money in justice. There's only a decent future that you'll never get to see. But we stand on the shoulders of people like you who've worked so hard and who work so hard, not just on a national level. I know you're very, very concerned about what's going on in West Virginia and the looting of your environment there and how it impacts so many thousands of people. Keep it up, Bob. We recognize you. We're grateful for you. The world wouldn't be the same without you. And the world will be better, ultimately, because of you.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you very, very kindly. That's inspiring.
And anybody out there listening who hasn't picked up a checkbook or, gone right to the penny jar, good God. This show is amazing. He does this all the time, folks. Contribute to it. I don't have all the snide, dramatic comedy of Ira Glass during the pledge drive for NPR. How about this? Just pick up damn checkbook and write a check for Bob's mission. It's worthwhile what he does every day.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you. And we'll get back to Pastor Pillow soon.
Can't wait. Thank you, Bob. Right. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a good night.
Bye now.
All right. Bye bye.
That, of course, is what we call conversation radio. And that, of course, is the one and only, the inimitable, Eric Bjorn, A-R-I-K-B-J-O-R-N. You can find his Facebook writer's page, spelled the very same way. You can find him at Amazon, and you can find him at forwardprogressives.com. And he is read all over the world for reasons that I think at this point in time should be more than obvious. I'm going to take a little break here. We are past the halfway mark in the program. I want to extend thanks to Glenn and to Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa notes, glory hallelujah to America's next president, Ted Cruz, peace be upon him. Damn you for killing off Brother Bob today. Well, I certainly feel damned. Thank you, Asa, for the warm and fuzzy sentiment. But thank you, Asa, for helping out with fundraising this evening. Thank you to Glenn, and thank you to Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, with feather entry number 2. Remember, everybody, there are two hand-painted turkey feather portraits, mounted, framed, and signed. And one of those will go to a name pulled from a hat after Moran Monday next week. And everybody who contributes between now and then goes into the drawing. Right now, Carol has better than even odds. But also right now, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 people in the drawing. Don't you want to maybe? Yeah, I know. So yeah, break time at the horn. You know the number, right? Area code 304-574-8178. That is, that's what we call line one. Line two is the stress line, 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. Really? I'm going to have to, now come on, damn it. I hate it when this happens. What do you mean you can't find it? And let's see. There we go. Yeah. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you for coming home. Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, maybe I'm eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small.
You know, I don't just do things. No, 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 no. Not at all. That was the two-hit wonder band, Spandau Ballet. Yeah. Yeah. There was a Spandau reference earlier in the program. See? I pay attention. I really, really do. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. It is 15 minutes before the hour. And there is so much value and so much detail in what Eric brought to the conversation this evening. I feel like it would be, well, at least advisable. I mean, we talked about the woman in California, and by the way, I'm told now, thank you very kindly, Marty, that the Castro Valley is in Alameda County, south of Oakland. And the woman who decided to scream at the Muslims who were minding their own business and doing their obligatory prayers. I mean, you know how I feel about religion. Organized religion, not spirituality, organized religion, where you have to wear a special hat or your great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky won't like you, or you got to wear your hair a certain way or cover up your hair or not wear pants or, well, wait a minute, I might could enjoy a God who doesn't want you to wear pants. No, that's only women. Never mind, sorry. You know, or you can eat this but not that, or it, you know, I wants to know who your tailor is. I think that it is all just Bronze Age superstitious rubbish, right? But I also acknowledge, being at least a semi-enlightened human being, that not everybody's going to feel about it the way I do, that not everybody is going to have the strength to resist that kind of mind control, and that some people, simply by virtue of where or when or how or among whom they were born, I mean, you can't help. I mean, I was going to be a Southern Baptist, okay? It was foreordained. It was for me to get free of it. And if one could say that one prays, one would pray that that someday everyone will be free of religion. You know, yesterday was December the 8th. It was the anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon. And once again, I hearkened back to that Monday night in the studio of the little gospel radio station where I was queuing up probably the Chuck Wagon Gang or Squire Parsons or Jesus, This Is Jimmy. When the United Press International sent out more bells than the alarm bells than they sent out for tornadoes, announcing the assassination of John Lennon. And I mention this because, you know, he was imagining that world too. No hell below us, no heaven only, no hell below us. Above us, only sky. And so I can dream of that day as well. But that's all it is a dream. But the fact that this woman in California felt so white privileged to be able to harangue people who had nothing to do with anyone's torture, anyone's beheading, and yet she was making them collectively responsible for it. Well, guess what? Marty tells me that woman works in the California Department of Corrections. God forbid she's a guard. Can you imagine what a living... I mean, no, there are no fun prisons. Can you imagine what a goddamn joy she must be to work around? Wonder what she says to the Muslim prisoners there in whatever Department of Corrections facility she works at. Jesus Christ. Michael. Uh, with a story he sent along you might want to take note of. Michael says, by way of introduction, I understand this arrest occurred back in the middle of November. At the risk of sounding like one of those paranoid, fearful people, it is a bit troubling. It is comforting to know that the plot got foiled so the system can and does work. Headline from the Chicago Sun-Times, terror suspect pleads guilty in planned attack on guard base. First, Jonas Edmonds dropped off his cousin at Midway Airport to catch a flight to Egypt. Then he returned to his cousin's Aurora, Illinois home to collect the uniforms Hassan Edmonds once wore as a member of the Illinois National Guard. After the feds arrested him, Jonas Edmonds lied about his cousin's trip to Egypt. He told authorities he's going to visit a friend or wherever he's going. I don't know. Somebody. He's trying to move there. But Jonas Edmonds knew that Hassan Edmonds had recently set out to join Islamic State terrorists, according to Jonas Edmonds' 22-page plea deal with prosecutors. Not only that, but Edmonds had planned to disguise himself in Hassan Edmonds' uniform and attack the guard base in Joliet, where Hassan Edmonds had trained. He had hoped to kill as many as 120 soldiers, prosecutors have said. And look, somehow or another, the system worked, and he didn't get to. Amazing, isn't it? But, of course, in the midst of all of this wild-eyed paranoia, you realize what lurks behind it. What lurks behind it is the further broadening of the surveillance state. And it will come as surely as mushrooms follow from a warm late spring rain. There will be bills in the Congress, and it'll be something that, amazingly, Democrats and Republicans can agree on, and we'll just need to be surveilled a little bit more, because ISIS. Meanwhile, something far more prosaic, really. The story of Hamza Warsame. He fell off a sixth-story roof in Seattle, in the Capitol Hill neighborhood this past Saturday. No report yet from the King County Medical Examiner on cause or manner of death. But Hamza Warsame's family says that he was beaten and then shoved off the roof by other students near Seattle Central College. People on social media are begging the police to investigate his death as a hate crime. And maybe they will. And maybe at some point the federal government will wake up and realize that Robert Louis Deer Jr. really was a goddamn terrorist. And not just a white guy with a nasty beard who lived in a trailer that didn't have running water or plumbing or a stove or anything like that, and that when a guy says I'm a murderer for the babies, that he's engaging in terrorism. In both instances, however, hold not thy breath. Over on Facebook and on Twitter, there's a group called Justice for, the numeral 4, Hamza. Justice for Hamza. Young Somali man. And the Seattle police say that they're aware of concerns about Mr. Warsame's death. And, you know, they're going to try to find out what happened before his fall. One person tweeted, "You kidding me? The kid was beaten and thrown off a 60-foot building. Come on now." Seattle Police Department tweeted back, "Not sure where that info is coming from. Working to get an update, our department in contact with the family." And the family is pleading for calm. Moomin Dimbil said, I would like to ask all those who are making comments to refrain and wait until we find the truth. I want to know what happened to Hamza, how he died. That's all I want to know. But they don't want him labeled a suicide if he wasn't. If he was a suicide, they would like to know why. Because those things seldom happen in vacuums now, do they? No, they don't. They don't. Hey, a note from Steve from Vermont. Subject line, Fear Factor. I needed a rant, says Steve. We should not forget that fascism is on the rise worldwide, most notably in France and other EU nations. Imposed austerity measures seem as much of a cause as panic over immigration. Americans are known for their historical amnesia, but Europe's collective memories of fascism, war, and death should be prominent. But even at this time, it appears to be fading. And that's a fact. Steve's not overstating it. Charlie Chaplin produced and starred in the 1940 movie The Great Dictator, which lampooned a Hitler-like dictator and his hapless civilian doppelganger. Chaplin later said he regretted making the movie because it humanized its subject, using slapstick humor to avoid the reality of the barbarism taking place in Europe at the time. Ronald Reagan got lots of TV exposure as host of the weekly General Electric Theater, a series of half-hour dramas while simultaneously building a reputation as a right-wing shill for extremist causes that emerged from moneyed interests like the John Birch Society. Reagan lobbied against the safety net and Medicare and described them as a communist plot. Then he became the California governor and destroyed the progressive subsidized state university system, and when he became president, began dismantling protections for the middle and working class. This country, by the way, is still reeling from what Ronald Reagan did under the guise of humanitarianism to mental health care in this country. A major Reagan speech during the 1980 campaign for president was in Philadelphia, Mississippi. That's Neshoba County, by the way, I'll add editorially, the home of the Ku Klux Klan, just a few miles from where several civil rights workers were murdered. 3. Reagan referred to the term states' rights in a place where people were being persecuted and dying without federal protections. As we now know, the term states' rights has libertarian anti-government overtones, but actually at the time Reagan was referring to the culture of white supremacy. So we now have another former television star running for president, and because of his racist and xenophobic views, he's being condemned by his fellow right-wing hacks as a fascist. We've heard Republicans like Paul Ryan and Lindsey Graham fend off any ideological association with Trump by saying, this is not what the Republican Party stands for. Or in the case of Lindsey Graham, this is not what the Republican Party stands for. Hold me, John! And Steve asks, really? After 40 years of dog whistle politics, serving up campaigns of fear, hate, and class race resentments, emerging from the Nixon Southern strategy through anti-worker Reagan years and the profiteering, privatizing, deregulated George W. Bush years, the Republican Party is the fascist party in the United States today. Trump is a monster of their own creation, and no one should be surprised this is happening. Putting the genie back in the bottle will be impossible. And yes, the whole world is watching. Long ago and far away, in right-wing circles, a concept was born called the Overton Window. If you present unpalatable, plutocratic, extremist, hateful ideas to Americans, most likely they will be rejected. But the psychological principle is simple. By presenting less extreme concepts over time, the population becomes desensitized to the original idea. And slowly, through the use of propaganda, any idea presented as less extreme will be accepted as more mainstream. Everything outside this now acceptable idea will be seen as extreme and fringe. As an example, let's say dismantling Social Security, which is a hugely popular and self-sustaining program and beneficial to the vast majority of Americans, but if privatization is presented as the choice of a rugged individual making investments in the stock market and as a patriotic choice, even if it's a mandated choice, it sounds less severe, even mainstream or sensible. In contrast to Trump, the other right-wing hacks running for president think they can benefit from the Trump fascism phenomenon by appearing less extreme. Really? Fascist light. Go for it. Which is exactly, I note editorially in the midst of Steve's note, what I've been saying about Cruz. Ted Cruz is a wild-eyed, overeducated, right-wing fascist maniac. But because of Trump, people, and particularly among those answering polls in Iowa, are looking at him saying, you know what? That Trump might be a little too extreme, but that Cruz, my oh my, he certainly seems like a moderate family values pro-life candidate to me. Steve continues, but everything has shifted, and the Republican Party cannot run from the disgrace it has become. Is the Overton window still in effect? How can the Republican Party destroy Trump without destroying themselves? One way is becoming more like Trump, and the Canadian-born Texas Senator Ted Cruz seems the likely inheritor of the Trump mojo if Trump implodes. But Trump supporters are people too. They've been fear-mongered, manipulated, sound-bit, socially engineered, and propagandized to the dark side. Is it too late? Going to the heart of the matter, understanding the economic and social fragility of their lives can give them a stake, and if Trump implodes, Bernie's the only candidate that can possibly reach them by helping them understand how the game is still rigged and teaching people how to get organized and empowering them by becoming involved in positive social action. And as far as I know, Bernie's still flying coach. Amen, 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 and amen. Thank you, Steve. Steve from Vermont. Thank you very much. Very much indeed. Can Bernie reach him? I don't know. I will say this. When we talk about Trump supporters, and particularly with my expertise on the South, and Steve asks the question, like, is it too late? And can Bernie reach them? I think Bernie can reach a subset of them. But please understand that Southerners in particular, but not exclusively, Southerners who are still, by God, in love with the Civil War, the lost cause, the noble effort to preserve our culture. Most of those folks are not going to learn because they didn't learn from that. Or they didn't stay educated. Maybe the first generation, the veterans who actually fought and died, maybe they did. But they didn't stay that way. How many right-wingers, and you can still hear it on hate radio today, say things like, well, you know, we could have won in Vietnam if they wouldn't have kept us from winning. We didn't lose that war. We didn't win it. The generals kept us from winning it. Which, incidentally, is a damned interesting little thing that happens with history, because it's the same goddamned argument that was presented inside Weimar Germany in the immediate aftermath and collapse that followed the end of the First World War. We wasn't beat. We just lost.
We did not lose this. We were not beaten. We had it taken from us, you see.
Hmm. All right. 5 minutes past the hour. Check this out. So it was a couple of nights ago when we had the clip of Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, retired, using a common insult against the President of the United States over on Fox, for which he was roundly and soundly suspended, probably with pay. And at one, I expect Trump or one of these people, well, maybe one of these experts on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. I'm still waiting. We got awfully close a couple of years ago, back in 2012, with Rick Santorum referring to the President of the United States as he's a nig. I think they're going to get all the way there at some point in time. It's really more of a betting poll, not on if, but on who. So, you ever heard of Joyce Kaufman? For about a half a tick on a watch, she was the chief of staff for Representative Alan West during his 15 minutes of fame that stretched out over one congressional term. Well, she got to be his chief of staff because she's a hate radio broadcaster. And she still is. Joyce Kaufman. And because, of course, she invited notorious Islamophobe and ginner up of violence, Pam Geller, to discuss Donald Trump and the Muslims. Sweet suffering God, you're going to want yourself a hockey puck for this. Fair warning.
As is mine, as is yours. I shouldn't have to be the one who reacts viscerally. I should have a commander-in-chief who takes the lead on issues like this. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt woke up today, December 8th, in 1941, he didn't address the American people by saying, look, don't be mean to Japanese Americans. If you see them, you know, invite them in for dinner. He said, we're going to root out all of the evil in this world. We'll go wherever we have to. And we're going to defeat it. American people want a leader that says that. Not
you, what? What? History's dead. History's just dead. FDR didn't say be nice to Japanese like that Kenyan Muslim you slurper did. No. We did horrible, horrible things to perfectly loyal Japanese Americans that we didn't do to Germans, that we didn't do to Italians, that we didn't do to other members of the Axis. No, no. But that's what this weirdo wingnut admires FDR for. Now you have to understand, if you're a wingnut weirdo, you have to despise FDR because communism, Social Security. But I got to go back over this.
Eleanor Roosevelt woke up today, December 8th, in 1941. He didn't address the American people by saying, look, don't be mean to Japanese Americans. If you see them, you know, invite them in for dinner. He said, we're going to root out all of the evil in this world. We'll go wherever we have to, and we're going to defeat it. American people want a leader that says that, not one that says, please, you know, don't be Islamophobic.
Well, listen, the American people...
And this is the Pam Geller part. you know what? If you need to take the hockey puck out for a little barfing, sorry, I know. Somebody's cooking dinner somewhere. But still, do what you got to do.
At least half, and certainly the young, which is deeply troubling, have been clubbed and, you know, brainwashed and rendered mentally defective in these decades of leftist inculcation in the public schools, in the culture, in the John Stewartization of the world, you know, of America. They are unable to think.
What the does the John Stewartization of America exactly, or even imprecisely, mean? That America, because does it mean America is getting wittier? Because John Stewart's pretty damn witty. Everything he says doesn't make me laugh, but he's made me laugh a lot. Or does anybody, what? The John Stewartization of the world, of America. And so that ties in nicely with what comes up next.
Think. You know, this. If you see what's happening on college campuses, it used to be when I went, it was madness. Now my colleagues and I are never invited. It's just, you know, these are hotbeds of inculcation, of anarchy, of hatred of freedom, of hatred of Jews, of hatred of America, of everything we are.
What college is she talking about? Because I'm pretty sure that ain't Auburn and it ain't Alabama. Almost rock solid certain it's not West Virginia or Marshall. I'm pretty sure it's not UNC or Notre Dame or Cal. Oh, it's Cal, isn't it? Yeah, okay, because they don't like Pam Geller because she preaches hatred. Hotbeds of inculcation, of anarchy, of hatred of freedom, of hatred of Jews, of hatred of America, of everything we are. Yeah, they're on college campuses. Bula bula, y'all. And look, if Eric Bjorn gets to tear up Godwin's law, then I guess we have to let Pam Geller too.
And you know, this is, you know, it's how, you know, the Nazi youth became an enormous movement.
That's right.
But it's not different in terms of methodology of how that happened, of how, you know, how totalitarianism grabs hold of a free society.
What, Edith? Totalitarianism grabs hold of a free society when you start saying that you're going to round people up and ship them somewhere else in the world. Hey, Australia, we got some Muslims. Will you take them? How about you, South Africa? Mm-hmm, yeah. We're going to send you some Muslims, Mexico. Bolivia, yeah, you too. You get a couple. God damn, it's like some sort of bizarre fascist version of the Oprah show. You get a Muslim! You get a Muslim! You get a Muslim! You get a Muslim! But that was the sane part of the program. Because she inhabits a sort of bell jar universe, in which she is the persecuted minority, I presume she's not living on pork and beans, Pam Geller. But she is. She's the one being persecuted because nobody's giving her, college money to go and spew vitriol and venom and hate. They save that for Ann Coulter. No, really. No, she's the victim. And you know who's after her? At least according to the messages that she receives through the staples that were, you know, once placed in her abdomen or something. Powerful receivers, those, really. You can get messages just going through the electric eye opening of a grocery store door. I mean, there you are. You're just going to the grocery store. You're walking into Ralph's or whatever. Well, I think she's from Miami, so maybe the Publix. And the door swings open, and you hear, "The Muslims are coming!" And you hear it right down there through your belly button, because you're Pam Geller, and you're goddamn crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you didn't put the hockey puck away.
And what happens after these attacks? We get more Sharia. We get more calls for Sharia.
Where? I mean, I toddle around southern West Virginia a good bit, and I even get outside of Appalachia once in a while, and I have yet to see a billboard that says Sharia now. Well, see, that's because they're not saying it publicly. By the time they say it publicly, it'll be too late, Bob. More public calls for Sharia.
Can't depict Muhammad. And now Loretta Lynch. I'm going to...
Wait, from Muhammad to Loretta Lynch? Good God, this one woman goes from zero to Hitler in 1.2 seconds. But did you hear that? You can't depict Muhammad.
We get more calls for Sharia. You can't depict Muhammad.
You know what? That's probably true. You can't depict Muhammad. You know why? Because no one actually knows what he looked like. I mean, at best, there's a sort of cheesy, offhanded drawing. But that, you know what? You know who else you can't depict? Jesus. You know who else you can't depict? Moses. Not because of some stupid religious law, but because no one actually knows what they look like. Or if they were even real. Or if they were real, how real they were. Do you depict them in their youth? In their age? I mean, Michelangelo sculpted a Michelangelo sculpted a Moses, and the little bastard's got horns. Must have been after a long night of drinking down at the Sinai Disco or something. You know how it gets about 2 o'clock in the morning, a little horny. Of course you can't. And you know what? You also can't depict Confucius. You can't depict Lao Tzu. They try to depict the Buddha, but nobody seems to agree on what he looked like either. Sometimes he's all fat and smiling, and other times he's kind of dour and effete and carved into a rock wall in Afghanistan that gets dynamited by the idiots. They depicted, and they're quite fascinating, the paintings and what's left of the sculpture. The Mesoamericans and the Mayans, they depicted their gods. It was kind of stunning, really, when the ancient Greeks began manifesting their gods as human beings who behaved in a shockingly and not altogether nice human way. You know. Mm-hmm. So, no, you can't depict Muhammad. Or that great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. El, Yahweh, Allah, God, Deo, Theo, that guy. Mm-mm. But anyway, I don't know. Maybe Pam Geller just sits around sketching Muhammad, and she's feeling a little nervous or something. But you know who's after her? that Muslim Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General of the United States. You didn't know she was a Muslim, did you? Well, they all are!
And now Loretta Lynch, I'm going to prosecute anti-Muslim rhetoric. What does that mean? That means if some idiot does something stupid, not because anybody called for it, because if you read my work, my work is in support of free speech so that there is no violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't help what the enemy is doing. But if somebody has, let's say, Atlas Shrugs in their browser,
right?
Hey, you know what? I could be arrested based on what Loretta Lynch said.
Actually, no, Pam. And the main reason for this, that you can't, you're an idiot. Foursquare, bona fide, brass plated. I can be arrested for something Loretta Lynch said. Loretta Lynch is not, as yet, a law unto herself, Sharia or otherwise. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, notes, this bitch is Ann Coulter without the Adam's apple. Mm-hmm. I would say that she's Ann Coulter without the personality. But you do notice that she got a hustle in there for her blog, because she just bogarted Ayn Rand's skanky, scurvy work. Yeah. But, you know, because, see, she's a little nervous. Maybe she's had a conversation with her lawyer or something. And the lawyer said, yeah, Pam, honey, Pam. Lay off the Muslim hate speech for a while. You're gonna wind up getting sued to a tune that you can't afford to pay when one of these crackpots decides to crack off a few rounds. Yeah, I know you say that you're peaceful and everything, but you know, calling people vermin and the stuff you do. But the paranoia is in full flower. Now, Attorney General Loretta Lynch did say, we prosecute deeds, not words. And maybe that's part of our problem. Europe does not seem to be unfree. Neither do our neighbors in the unfrozen north, the Canadians. And they will put your ass in the dock and try you for babbling on in a hate-filled fashion, such as what Pamela Geller routinely does. I don't know. Is referring to Pamela Geller as a hate-filled idiot, is that hate speech in itself? I don't know. I don't know. But I don't run a blog in which I call for people to open carry Second Amendment freedom march in front of mosques. That's pretty hateful.
I'll tell you something, Joyce. I have one thing to say. Come and get me, biatch. Right. I really mean it.
Oh, me
you
too.
Do
That's,
that.
I said that the day she was on the, I was on the air when she made that statement, and it came across the screen, and I said, I am going to sit here and wait. And in the meantime, I'm going to tell you everything that is wrong with the Quran. I'm going to tell you everything that is wrong with a theology that masquerades as a religion. And I said, and they'll just have to come.
Yeah, wait, stop. Time out. Jack, okay, time out. A theology that masquerades as a religion? Now, I am, as I have frequently noted, a long-time knower of words. Don't theology and religion go together like cheese and crackers or peas and carrots? Or guns and ammo? Oh, sorry, that was bad. It is a theology masquerading as a religion, wrapped in a mystery and surrounded by an enigma. What, Churchill? But they're on a mission. Pam and Joyce. It's a theology masquerading as a religion. Oh, help me, Obi-Wan. You're our only hope.
And arrest me and handcuff me, because I'm not going to start talking, and neither are you, and neither are a lot of the heroines. Unfortunately, it's mostly women.
Of course. But if the Obama administration wants to go to war against freedom, wants to arrest me for my unalienable rights, guaranteed...
You know what's neat about broadcasting? If you're just a talent and you don't have to play with any faders or buttons or anything like I do here, you can do it. You can just sit there and talk, and your hands can be doing all kinds of different things at the same time. And I think, well, I don't know. idle hands are the devil's plaything, because I think they're enjoying this just a little too much. And what they're gonna? I guess these two are gonna go all Orange Is the New Black on us.
Under the First Amendment, I'm going to put on my little black dress, Joyce, my string of pearls, and my thigh highs,
right.
And I'm going to head on down to the jail.
Yep, I'm with you. We'll be cellmates.
And I told you.
Look, I'm not going to let what's happening in Sweden happen here. Because, you know, we talk about terrorist acts, but I don't want my daughter to be raped and my grandchildren to be raped either. Sweden has the second highest number of rapes in the world. One out of every four Swedish women will be raped. They never had rape until they allowed an incalculable amount of Muslim immigration.
An incalculable amount. That word, of course, means a number incapable of being calculated. The poor damn Swedes, and our buddy Scott in Sweden's just going to love this. The poor Swedes, I guess they're still using Roman numerals who knows what. Arabic numerals, maybe. Oh, my Jesus, of course, Sharia math. But she's going to put on her little black dress and her poils and her thigh highs. Mm-hmm. She said it. I didn't. And they're going to be cellmates down there in the Obama FEMA re-education camp that's in the basement of the Walmart out in West Texas somewhere. What would you give? What would you give to just watch that woman march down to, I don't know, what would it be, maybe the Miami-Dade County detention facility, and beg to be arrested on the fiat of Barack Obama? Lady, sorry. No, I'm not going to arrest you. No. I see you're wearing your little black dress and your pearls and your thigh highs. It's a couple of blocks over, okay? You can probably find somebody. I don't want to know about it, lady. I'm just a desk sergeant. I don't want to know about it, but you can find somebody a couple of blocks over that you can probably pay to pretend that he's Barack Obama and he's arresting you for your speech. You absolutely have a good time, lady. And you, go with her. Maybe you can get a package deal. But much as, apparently now it's time. This is the point in the program where Carol Baker uses the eye bleach. Some things you just can't unsee. I warned you. But as Eric pointed out, and we discussed, it's not just what this awful, hateful, nasty, Mussolini-looking fascist with, you know, whatever that is on his head. It's not just what he says. It's the fact that he is creating a philosophical space, if one dares to use that word, a philosophical space in which others can say, yep, I agree. Hello, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson. I hate it when I do that and then the magic doesn't work. Well, there's one more than one way to do this. Maybe. Where's the damn keyboard? Get over here! There we go. And... I'll get there in a second. Aha. Come here, Marion. You know you want to. Of course you do. Now tell us all about it.
A poll I heard about yesterday was taken among American Muslims as to whether they favored Sharia law over the constitutional system we have now. And guess what? A majority of them said, yes, we favor Sharia law. Now that isn't something as Americans we want. I don't think we want to be cutting off the hands of criminals. I don't think we want husbands to be free to beat their wives.
Although he has from time to time noted that if wives are being beaten, it is probably because the wife is complaining too much, or that maybe she shouldn't complain when she is beaten, or, you know, shut up! Because he's been down that road. But you notice the reference to, I saw a survey online the other day. Well, this is the same bizarre, unscientific piece of crap that Frank Gaffney generated that started all the hullabaloo in the first place with T-Rump, bringing T-Rump to the... These things happen a little, you know, one block is laying upon the next until the next thing you know, you're standing on top of it yelling, Seek Heil. I'm sorry, I'm just going there. But no, Pat doesn't want anybody to get their hands cut off. Then they can't rub themselves down with Sea of Galilee mud mask. Right? Right.
I don't think we ought to stone homosexuals. There are a lot of things we shouldn't do that Sharia mandates. And yet, here we have a large group of people that don't want that. And yet, Donald Trump said something about keeping people who have those views out of this country, and he has been excoriated all over the world.
But not by Pat.
So many people, including Republicans, say he's gone too far. But the Donald says, I stand by what I said.
Yeah. And so too. Does former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson? What was that? What did you say a minute ago, Carol Baker? No, you didn't. Yes, you did. You don't have to say her name three times. Sometimes you only have to say it once.
Hi, Ann. Happy birthday.
It's my best birthday gift ever.
I thought about that at 3:30 this morning. I woke up. I said, I got to remember that today's Anne's birthday, but who could have gotten her a better gift than Donald gave her?
And the second best gift is watching MSNBC. They're absolutely hysterical. Poor Fox News doesn't know what to do. So they're talking about, you know, dieting tips, Pistorius. They'll talk about anything but this.
Yes.
But MSNBC, hysterical.
And CNN. Yes, CNN is a Muslim ban is racist and unconstitutional. Did you know that Islam was a race?
No, nor did I know that the Constitution required us to extend civil rights to the rest of the world, particularly terrorist-producing countries.
Right, and don't forget, they have no use for the Constitution when it comes to that Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights. What a bunch of hypocrites they are.
Yeah, by the way, in case you're wondering, this is, once again, Joyce Kaufman. What a little delight she is. Mm-hmm. Oh, we were talking a minute, and that's about as much of her as I can stand, by the way. That's actually more. But since it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and since we were talking about and asking the question, gee, who's the big beneficiary here? Cui bono, to get all Latin it. Well, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, has received a new endorsement for president of the new United States of Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. Yes. Who? Why, who would say something like this? Senator Ted Cruz is a proven champion for marriage and religious freedom and someone we can absolutely count on to fight to restore marriage to our nation's laws and defend the religious liberty of the tens of millions of Americans who believe that marriage is the union of one man and one woman, said Brian Brown, National Organization for Marriage's president. Senator Cruz has not only signed NOM's presidential marriage pledge committing to take specific actions as president, but he has personally authored the pending federal marriage amendment to restore the right of states. Right of states? States' rights? States' rights! To define marriage as one man, one woman. But would it also not allow states to define marriage as one man, one penguin? Ooh, it does get tricky, doesn't it? Oh, next thing you know, if you search Bob Kincaid on Google, it'll show up as Bob man on penguin. Oh, dear God. The decision to endorse in the Republican primary race was a very difficult one. Would you like a fresco? There are many tremendous candidates remaining who have made support for marriage a pillar of their careers in public service, including Senator Rick Santorum, who will never be president of the United States, Governor Mike Huckabee, who has a rousing business going in cinnamon-based anti-diabetes fake cure hustles, Dr. Ben Mumblin Carson, who will cut your ass, and we're all afraid of him now. In fact, we expect him to come over, since we didn't give him the endorsement, we expect him to come after us with a hammer. And Senator Marco Rubio, who really, really loves marriage, and no, we haven't heard anything at all about him being a philanderer, so shut up. We realize that our endorsement of Senator Cruz will be very disappointing to them. Should any of these candidates emerge as the Republican nominee, we would enthusiastically support them. However, there is a real danger that conservatives will split the vote, allowing someone like Donald Trump to emerge from the crowded field, which would be disastrous. Senator Cruz has run the best campaign thus far. Yeah, see, are you beginning to be just almost as curious as I am about this? And not Trump. No. Cruz. Cruz is the moderate who loves family values. I can't wait till he gets busted snorting meth off of some guy hooker's butt. Really, I can't. Okay, so we've got a little definitional help here from Roger out in Oregon. Under the subject line, Word to Your Mama. Lessons in the New Angrish. Wingnut says absolutely means maybe. Wingnut says exponential means more than. Wingnut says incalculable means forgot the number or can't read it without my glasses. And there you go. Meanwhile, Irish Dave says, Bob, some people say the reason the U.S. got the silver medal, lost the war in the Southeast Asian war games, was the generals believed the Blahs wouldn't fight and shit. By the way, ever see a bust of Pammy Geller? Should be called Atlas, oh, Atlas Jugs. Okay, is all I'm saying. And also to John Cap'n Rue Bolton likes them. What has been seen cannot be unseen. Oh, no. Oh, no. I've been hanging on to a lot of stuff for this prayer meeting Wednesday. I really, really have, and I don't want to let it. I don't want to let it go to waste. We've given Ted Cruz a lot of time. We've given God knows the orange-haired pro wrestling fascist an abundance of time. Shame on me. And poor little Marky Mark Rubio has gone begging. He was asked why God lets bad things happen to good people. And this may not be real. This comes from something called Christian Post. Where was God on 9/11? Where was God in Paris? He recalled being asked. I said, where God always is, on the throne in heaven. The question was, how could God allow these bad things to happen? It always challenges us to understand that God's ways are not our ways. What we may interpret as bad, and most certainly is, in the case of Paris or 9/11, even that is part of a broader plan for the universe and for our lives that we are just not going to know the answer to. God's ways are not our ways.
Dumb this one is. Reproduce he should not have.
Now, is that satire? I don't know. But it's awfully damn believable, isn't it? It always challenges us to understand that God's ways are not our... No, no, sometimes God's way is to have 20 little children chopped into chutney in an elementary school in Connecticut. Don't ask God. God will just tell you to piss off. I mean, haven't you read Job? Yeah. Oh, please tell me this audio is going to play. It has to. No, it's not. This must be a video card issue this evening. Hold on. Because we can't leave prayer meeting Wednesday without some Klingenschmidt. Mm-hmm. Delicious with sweet taters. Oops. I got too many keyboards here. We ought to get something now. Okay, let's try this again. Because it's so much more fun when he prays than when I do him praying. Or, well, mock him praying. And this is actually kind of important. Because if you want, in a way it goes back to what Pamela Geller was talking about. Because the incitement to murder is a real thing. Every Republican who stood up in front of a camera or on the House floor or on the Senate floor and talked about the damning Planned Parenthood videos or God knows Carly Farina
I saw them eating a little baby on a table with tortilla chips and some of that spinach artichoke stuff with the, what is that? Water chestnuts in there that makes it a little bit crud? Yeah, I saw them. They were eating baby with that. And they were saying, baby. Well, Klingenschmidt's part of it. And now we have, yes, the audio in both channels.
And news. Dr. Chaps reports on these important issues.
Now he's Dr. Chaps.
A violent shooter kills three, injures nine at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs. Residential.
Wait. Now, Dr. Chaps, really? Dr. Chaps? I'm sorry, that sounds like something that you pay extra for on some sleazy website, but. Yeah.
Candidate Marco Rubio says God's law is higher than the Supreme Court. And a homosexual resolution fails at the United Nations.
Former Navy chaplain Gordon James Klingenschmidt took a stand to defend religion.
I'm sorry, I was good. Former Navy chaplain Gordon James Klingenschmidt. Oh, here we go. Because there's going to be some praying. Now, dang it.
Attorney General Loretta Lynch has called the shooting, which killed three and wounded nine, a, quote, crime against women. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper said, it's a tragedy that is beyond speech. Among the victims was police officer Garrett Swayze, a University of Colorado, Colorado Springs police officer, who rushed to the clinic to offer assistance when called upon. UCCS Police Chief Brian McPike said of Swayze during a Saturday evening vigil, there was no way any of us could have kept him here.
Skip a bit, brother. Let's get to the praying part. I mean, come on, guys.
Bible refers to as sin. There are other controversies because they want to educate primary school, in other words, first graders, kindergartners, and even younger. But their resolution did not just use the controversial terms, it went further, ostensibly to include the justification to include terms in the order to modify the social and cultural patterns of conduct of men and women of all ages. In other words, social
UN resolution.
Engineering.
In other words, social engineering. You know, getting men to quit beating up on the women folk. On and on and on and on. Right there. Okay, there he's selling something. Okay, here. No, that's $99.
Thisname.org. Or.
Well, darn it! Did we miss the prayer? Where's the okay? Well, anyway, okay. So we'll just have to read this after all. It's disgusting enough as it is. Father, no. He prays for an end to the violence. Father, whatever his motives, we ask that you would end the violence, end the pro-abortion Holocaust. What? Whatever his motives, meeting Robert Louis Deer, who went into court today and kind of spoiled everything for Chappie Klingenschmidt by saying, I'm guilty. I'm a warrior for the babies. Mm-hmm. But no, we pray for justice for the unborn children. Mm-hmm. And, Father, end the pro-abortion Holocaust. End the genocide against innocent children. There are many more innocent children killed at that Planned Parenthood that are not even being acknowledged by the news. But, Father, we pray that all the violence would cease. Yeah, see how it works? Even though that Planned Parenthood didn't do abortion number any at all. None, zero, zip, zilch, nada. And as Carol notes, I finally realized why Darth Cheney wants Muslims, that would be Count Dicula, yes, admitted into the United States. He figures that way we won't have to travel halfway around the world to torture them. Exactly. I mean, he's getting older. I mean, he can't just turn into a bat and fly out the window anymore. The human heart falls out. So let's wrap up this prayer meeting Wednesday with a word from Pope Frank, who, although he will never succeed in converting me to the Roman Catholic faith because I like women and don't want them to have to shut up in church or anything like that, and I wholeheartedly support the use of things like condoms and birth control pills and, yes, abortion. Because I'm pro-abortion. I am. A couple of weeks ago, actually, because I've been hanging on to this so that we could get closer to the Christmas season, because it just works better that way. Hang on, let's give a little. Yeah, here we go. Kind of Christmassy, at least. Like to use this time of year. Pope Frank, talking about Christmas. And this is not going to go over well with Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, or any of the war on Christmas freaks, said, Christmas is approaching. There will be lights, parties, Christmas trees, and nativity scenes. It's all a charade. The world continues to go to war. The world has not chosen a peaceful path. There are wars today everywhere, and hate. We should ask for the grace to weep for this world which does not recognize the path to peace. To weep for those who live for war and have the cynicism to deny it. God weeps. Jesus weeps. You want to know when this guy delivered this sermon? He delivered it when they unveiled the Vatican Christmas tree, a 25-foot-tall... I'm sorry, 25-meter-tall. See, I'm such an American. That would be 82-feet-high pine from Bavaria. Mm-hmm. By the way, the... traditional creche nativity scene was accompanied not just by Joseph and Mary and the dinosaurs and Godzilla and the wise men. No. Pope Frank insisted that the manger scene include an elderly person in need. If I believed in saints, I would say that this guy deserved sainthood for just having the guts to say, at the Vatican, Christmas is approaching, there will be lights, parties, Christmas trees, and nativity scenes. It's all a charade. God weeps. Jesus weeps. Amen, Your Holiness. Amen. Absolutely. Thanks. And meanwhile, the right-wing Catholics around the world were poor white wingers around the world. They just ruined Christmas. That's okay. They're protecting Christmas in Ohio. Yeah, really. Jason Dixon manages the 13 Rooms of Doom haunted house, and his manger scene has gone up for the second year in a row, and his manger scene has a really, really frightening zombie Jesus kind of sitting up in the in the manger. Sycamore Township, Ohio. Officials of the town have said, take it down or we're going to fine you $500 a day. And on his Facebook page, he said, you know, we were going to take it down, but we decided to leave it up. All the lights are rehooked and open for business. Just no roof. Let's see what happens. Again with the roofs. Now, Sycamore Township is trying to say, no, this has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that it's a zombie Jesus. He's taking up too much square footage in his own yard. That's why he doesn't have a permit. He can't be more than 35% of the yard, and it can't be more than 200 square feet. There's only one problem. It's about 65 square feet, the manger scene is. And he's not in violation of the law. Jason Dixon has the courage to admit what it is, the reality of the situation. He said, I think it's the theme. It just rubs people the wrong way. That's why they're coming down so hard on me. Man, my father hates it. The other neighbors, they drive by and give me a thumbs up. On the other hand, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians have been protesting and picketing in front of his house and handing out pamphlets. The pamphlets say, God frowns upon this manger display. How they know that, we don't know, except they cite Bible verses. But Jesus is a zombie. Within any understood, commonly respected definition of the word, Jesus is a zombie. He just is. Undead. Yeah. So why don't the Christians just forgive him? And in regard to the White House Christmas tree, not the Vatican Christmas tree, Michael in Madison says, if that one in our White House had delivered that speech whilst unveiling the White House Christmas tree, he'd be impeached by New Year's Eve for waging jihad against Christmas. I'm not kidding. Wow. You know, only Nixon could go to China, and only the Pope can say Christmas is a charade. Oh, they're going to love him even more now, aren't they? Yeah. Well, thanks again, one and all, for joining in this evening. It has been a delightful conversation. Thank you very kindly to Eric Bjorn for truly an amazing, amazing discussion to begin the program. Thank you. I'm losing track of how far behind we are in fundraising, but I'm awfully, awfully thankful for the 90 that we raised this evening. Thank you, Carol Baker. And thank you, Asa. And thank you very kindly to Glenn. It's a big help. It's how we keep this all going. So tomorrow's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and oh, we may have a $500 fundraising goal for all I know. It's the holiday season. It's tough, I know. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there. Have a look about. And, yes, this always comes in handy.
Be patient with him, God.
Right. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.